Hey, Anna, are you feeling the madness? The Mars madness?
Please never say that again.
Well,
oh my God.
Since you're so interested in this, Mars is going to be the closest to Earth this summer. The closest it's been in 15 years.
Wow.
The last time was this close was 2003. That was when everybody went crazy to see Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So this summer, we're expecting another big outpouring of support. We call it Marsapalooza at the observatory.
I can't wait.
I mean, it's going to be 35.8 million miles away. On
just
July,
right next door.
Right next door. July 27th. Mark your calendars. But all summer, man, I can't wait for Mars. It's going to be the biggest story of the summer, I think.
Well, last summer we had the eclipse, so that's okay, over
it
now.
It won't be that big.
Okay.
But still,
you seem
big.
Pretty pumped.
I'm psyched because people love Mars and Martians. And yeah.
It's true. Whew,
just wait. Wait till they start calling the observatory.
Oh,
you're going to be so sick of Mars.
I'm already halfway there.
All right.
Just kidding.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up. I'm Dean Regas, co-host of Stargazers on PBS.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, NPR has created a unique way to answer science questions from its listeners, and it's called Skunk Bear. We're going to find out what all that means from its host, Adam Cole. So our guest today makes fun videos.
Yeah, super fun
into.
Videos.
Yeah. And I feel like, what if we turn the podcast into a fun video?
Well, I mean, there's always news. There's always space news going on. Every week there seems like there's something new to talk about.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm rapt to attention to all of it, mostly asteroids.
Asteroids? You're into the asteroids?
Well, I just want to be, look, I want to keep up with my current affairs, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
If I need to duck and cover, I just want to know, okay?
All right, so you're worried about these reports of all these near-Earth asteroids that keep skimming by us seemingly every week, seemingly sending us to...
In legitimate news outlets, I'm seeing
That's
these,
true.
Okay? This is not like the National Enquirer with, like, Bat Boy. This is, like, real science news... Whatever.
That is correct.
I know.
And I've been I'm fascinated by how often this is in the media because
really?
Well, because it sounds dangerous and that's why it's in the
it
media.
Does.
I think near Earth asteroids skimming past Earth.
Yep.
Well, but let's step back here. And it's not that close to us. When these things come by, they're usually a million or 2 miles away. So so that's not exactly close. But the reason why it's in the news a little more now is because our detection methods are getting so good. Like we can see them coming a little bit ahead of time. So then we can alert the media, who of course freaks out because they're like, asteroid coming to Earth, very close. And so astronomers, they're not very good at like telling jokes. As you
don't
know.
Say.
And so when they tell the media...
Stop the presses.
When they tell the media, the asteroid's going to miss us. It's just barely going to miss us. They mean millions of miles, but that's a joke to them.
Okay, I hate to use your own words against you, but didn't you just say how pumped you were that Mars was going to be 38 million miles from us?
Oh, yeah, whoops.
Whoops is right. And here you are like, it's only a million miles. Yet we're going to have an entire event and have to answer hundreds of phone calls about Mars being 38 million miles away.
I know. Because
you're not helping. You're not making me feel better about these asteroids.
Yes. Well, the thing about the asteroids is, this happens so frequently.
It does.
But we can't see them in the telescopes at the observatory. That's the problem. They go by so fast and they're so small. And so there's nothing we can show them. Whereas Mars, we can show them Mars. But I think the thing that's been in the news more often is because we can see them coming, which we hadn't been able to do before, whereas in the past they would come by and then the next day we'd be like, well, we just got missed by another asteroid. Phew. But now we can see them ahead of time, so we can scare you ahead of time.
And repeatedly. It's not just
That's
one
right.
time.
That's
it's
right.
like I see like it's too frequent.
I'm not
into it.
But no worries though. We don't have any big major asteroid that's coming towards us that's going to impact the Earth.
Fine.
Doesn't that make you feel a little better?
Yeah, no, I feel great.
Okay.
I feel great.
What else we got on the list?
Oh my gosh, okay, so we have a blue moon.
Oh yeah.
Which, okay, the phrase is once in a blue moon, it's fallen a little flat because it's the second time in like a few months we've had a blue moon.
2018 you realize has that. Two blue moons back to almost back to back, as about as close as you can get them, because we had a blue moon on January 31st,
right?
Another blue moon on March 31st. Well, it's going to be a while between the next one, but
shouldn't there be a term for two blue moons in a year?
Oh, that would be good.
Think on it.
All right, purple moon. Purple haze, not something.
Not your greatest work, but okay, fine.
Anyway, so this blue moon, March 31st, this is, it's not a big astronomical event, because it's just going to look like a normal full moon.
Oh, it's not a super moon.
And it's not a super moon this time. So it's just an ordinary
moon. And
no
eclipse.
And no eclipse. But, you know, it's still, if it gets people's attention that they go out and watch a moon rise, that's what's kind of cool. If this story gets any traction, the best thing you can do is just get your friends and family, go out to an overlook right at dusk, and then look to the east and watch a moon rise. People really get a kick out of it. I love watching the moon rise, just seeing how it just comes up above the horizon and you're watching the Earth rotate. And, it's just really good.
It's so great.
But you can see a moonrise any day. But if this gets you off the couch and looking, I'm all for it.
Agreed. And then, of course, other things happening. SpaceX. I think this should be a whole separate episode. Yeah. I think we're going to have to. But we have to at least mention how they just, shot a Tesla into space or whatever it was.
What was happening? I don't know. That came out of the blue. So they're like, okay, we're going to test a rocket. That's cool. Right. We're going to test a really big rocket. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Right. We're going to call it the Falcon Heavy, which is
a cool name.
That's
a
pretty
cool
name.
I mean,
and then all of a sudden, it comes out. This Tesla Roadster just flies through space with a mannequin astronaut in it.
And that was a little over the top, the mannequin.
Would you think it was a little cheesy?
I think it was a little, if you're going to launch a car into space, whatever, but did you have to put like that's what's going to happen? We're just going to drive right up there?
It's very impractical, that's for
very
sure.
Very impractical.
But the imagery was, I think it captured people's attention. They were like,
heck yeah, people were psyched.
Yeah, I could totally see myself from behind the wheel of a Tesla up in space. I don't know, but it was a really interesting idea. I don't know if it's more marketing stunt or.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that here's a private company that can launch something not just in Earth orbit, but off of Earth. I mean, it's traveling away from Earth. So it's way past where most satellites go. So it's actually an achievement. There's very few governments that could do what they did. And so it's kind of fun because amateur astronomers are still tracking the Tesla going out into space, and they're getting pictures.
It's just still going.
Oh yeah, it's still going. It's getting farther and farther from the Earth, but they're still capturing it. So it's pretty cool that they can see that going out in space, and the spaceman strapped in there. It's going to be there forever. It's going to be a long trip, man.
Long trip. Wow.
It's no secret that NPR isn't just radio anymore, and there's no better proof of that than Skunk Bear. Through video, audio, and animation, it answers science questions submitted by the audience. And we're so happy to welcome the host and reporter for NPR's Science Desk, Adam Cole, to Looking Up.
What in the world? When? Why? Where? Who's got the answer? Skunk Bear.
How old are the cells in your heart and brain?
How does a blind woman see the rain?
Can you rebuild a dune?
Can you outrun?
Can you walk to the moon?
Can you make love with spores?
No matter how scary
or extraordinary,
we'll answer in a manner that is very skunk-berry.
So ask a good question.
Well, Adam, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So if you could describe Skunk Bear, what exactly is it?
Well, Skunk Bear is a video series that comes out of NPR's Science Desk, and we sort of try to explore the joys and the challenges and the insights that come from science. And so a lot of our videos are about strange corners of the scientific world. Some of them are about the process that led to discoveries. And some of them are just about a really cool visual thing to look at.
Cool. So what has been, I mean, I'm sure that you love them all equally, but what's been like a really fun video to shoot?
Well, a lot of them, so I make some animations for some of them, and sometimes it's filmed. And so the animations I generally do from the comfort of my desk. But every once in a while, I get to go out of the office. So I like the ones where I get to leave the office. Recently, I went to Panama. Actually, it wasn't so recently. About a year ago, I went to Panama and got to meet some vampire bats. That was pretty fun.
So you really mean out of the office. I thought you meant like you get to go work remotely somewhere. I didn't know you're going to like go to a different country.
He goes from his office to Panama.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
That's right.
I work at the library sometimes. Yeah. So that isn't the same thing.
Then I went
They're
to
putting
the
in a hyperloop that, yeah, that's right.
Ooh, vampire bats. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really an amazing experience. We went into some caves and saw them sort of in their native habitat, and then to a lab where I got to meet them up close and see them drinking a blood meal that had been lovingly prepared for them.
What? Wait a second. So you got to say more about that. Yeah. Wait, what kind of blood meal?
Well, so this is it. So the scientists at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute go up to Panama City to a butcher shop where someone has collected the blood of cows and sometimes pigs, and they just bring an empty bucket and they leave with a full one and they bring it back, put in the refrigerator, and then each of the bats that are in their care get about a tablespoon a day. So they put them in these little troughs and the bats come down and lap them up like, a lot like cats.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. I bet it's kind of cute. Like laughing. You have a cat, yeah. Don't you? Like, come on.
That's not the look on my face right now. That's more of disgust.
I'm trying to open my mind
that's
here.
Okay.
Well, that's the thing is they can be pretty cute. They one of the things that I learned while I was there was that these bats are big cuddlers. They're very social, and they're sort of in a similar way to chimpanzees. They have a lot of grooming of each other that they do. And they share their food, and they're always, you know, wrapping their little wings around each other and snuggling up. So
that is adorable.
They're sort of grotesquely adorable.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm on board.
And then people are going to carry them in their handbags around places, like little toy dogs. Is that what's going to happen next?
I don't know.
I think they're pretty. they're not the most cuddly towards humans, but towards their own kind. Yes.
Well, so how did you get into this field, you know, of very strange, odd science to programming?
Well, I did study biology. So I have a master's in biology, and I've always loved science. I grew up, my sister was very interested in all kinds of creepy crawly things. She would always find the snakes on our hikes and the frogs and point out the birds. This is my older sister. And so I think that sort of got me into the wonder of it all and trying to see things before her certainly probably helped encourage that. I grew up really interested in the natural world. And then when I got to college, I started out in physics because I had a great physics teacher in high school. And then I discovered that physics at the, you know, if you want to be a physicist now, it's a lot of quantum physics and a lot of theoretical stuff that I wasn't as excited about. So I switched over to biology. I studied mussels, not the kind on your body, but the kind that live in the ocean.
Do they drink blood?
They don't drink blood or anything really gross. No. I was studying their beards, actually. They have these byssus, which is just Latin for beard, that they use to attach to the rocks. And they look kind of just like, sort of thick whiskers. So that was what I spent a lot of time looking at. And then I thought, well, I've looked at mussel beards for maybe a little too long and decided to try writing, and I worked at a newspaper and then ended up here at NPR as a science reporter.
Yeah, well, I got to say, this is not the way we thought this interview was going to go, but we are all having...
Right, this is an astronomy podcast, right? I forgot to mention that.
All sciences.
Yes, we're wrapped with the tech. I mean, we were both, like, reacting. We were like, what? No way, what? Oh, my gosh, beards. This guy's been looking at beards too long.
So fun.
Yep.
Anyway, well, back to astronomy, since those are the
Yeah, let's
the
get back to that.
Yeah, you did a segment on the Cassini spacecraft, which we thought was really cool. I think we're going to play a little clip from it right now, and I think we got it.
Great.
In 13 years and 293 orbits around Saturn, Cassini has snapped 400,000 photos, compiled 600 gigabytes of data, and discovered at least 7 new moons. The mission was supposed to end in 2008, but Cassini just kept on trucking. Now it's finally starting to run out of fuel. Scientists are worried that when it loses power, it could crash into a pristine moon, contaminating a place where we might someday search for life. So they decided to smash Cassini into Saturn. Cassini's silicon and aluminum body will disintegrate in a fireball, and finally Cassini's fuel, its plutonium heart, will melt away. Cassini will be gone, but we'll still have all the postcards it sent back home.
Oh man, that is so cool.
That was very dramatic. Cool.
And I like how you add, you know, people have to go to Skunk Bear to see all the animations and the videos go with it. I know, you know, NASA provides all these great images of Cassini, but the stuff that you added to it was really great. Did you kind of feel like a kinship to the spacecraft? Is it, I know we were kind of sad when the mission ended and it goes to its fiery demise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you think about, you know, certainly this satellite has been hard at work longer than I have. And so thinking about, you know, how long that journey has been, you know, floating through the vastness of space for many years before it arrived and started taking these pictures. And then just how many, I mean, the thing that's amazing about Cassini to me is just how many times they renewed the mission. They had this goal. Oh, we're going to go out there and we're going to orbit Saturn a couple times and then we'll be good. And that ended and they were like, well, it's going great. You know, we still got plenty of juice left. Let's do another 5 years. And they've, you know, explored so much and taken so many pictures. And that's in the clip you heard 400,000 pictures. And to make this video, I actually looked through every single one of them, sort of picking out these little highlights. And one of the cool things, all these were still pictures, but if you stitch them together, they had sort of a flickery old film look, which is why there was sort of that thrum of old film underneath that clip, because it sort of created this flipbook effect that brought those images to life in a way that I think the stills didn't quite capture.
That's so cool. What are you kind of like working on as far as new topics or episodes that are coming out, or, you know, how does that process work, and what's next for the show?
Well, we're always, you know, it's a very wide-ranging show. Of course, all of science is sort of our purview. So the thing I'm working on right now is about hunting and conservation, sort of the historic way that hunting has helped fund and sort of molded conservation policy since the last century, basically, and how that is shifting now as less and less people hunt. Then the next one after that is about a skeleton we found in a school that is of unknown origin, a human skeleton.
And
sort of the quest to use all the scientific tools, forensic science, to figure out who that person was. And then I guess the next space-related one of my colleagues, a very talented reporter, Maddie Sofia, is going to be sort of joining the Skunk Bear team. And she has recently visited a probe that they're sending to the sun. And so she went and saw that. They're doing some tests. They put it in a giant vacuum and hang an oven above it that I guess can sort of simulate sun-like temperatures. I don't quite know how that works. But so there's a video that she's making that's going to come out on Skunk Bear about that in the next few. I guess we might hold it until this probe actually launches.
Oh, very cool.
But that's probably the next space one. We're probably going to do something about the Perseids, the meteor shower this summer. We went a little – this is probably too much detail, but we went a couple of years ago now to the Smithsonian bunker, essentially, where they keep all these interesting meteorites, and I got to see one that came from Mars, a little chunk of Mars got knocked off by some sort of impact, floated through the solar system for I think something like 15 million years and then landed on Earth as a meteorite.
Very cool.
So we'll be working on a story about that as well.
Well, Niana was very polite, but she was really asking, when are we going to be on the show?
Yeah.
That was really what she was trying to get
astronomy,
you to get to.
Astronomy, I just want to be on the show.
So anyway, we're available.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. I'm sure there's cool things in Cincinnati going on.
Yeah, we can talk about the Perseids.
You've been to exotic Panama, now come to Cincinnati.
That's right. I'm sure somebody's hanging out in a cave in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Well, so how do folks...
The sewers beneath Cincinnati.
That's right.
Have some wildlife.
So how do folks find you? How do they subscribe?
Well, you can subscribe to us by going to youtube.com/skunkbear, or we're actually now on Facebook as of a couple months ago. I think it's just facebook.com/NPRskunkbear. You can find us there, too.
Oh, well, this is great. Thanks so much for talking with us today, Adam.
Oh, it was my total pleasure.
Well, we'll have to. This sounds like somebody we need to go to a bar with. Like, you have so many stories. Anyway, we'll invite you over. Don't worry.
Right.
Sounds good. And you can check out a video I did about the history of beer at youtube.com/skunkbeer.
Awesome.
Totally.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Well, the Cincinnati Observatory has been around since the mid-1800s, so you can only imagine the many letters that we've received that include some interesting questions or some unique beliefs. And Dean has chosen a real humdinger that he is going to share with us today, right?
Yes, yes. Now, when I started at the Cincinnati Observatory back in 2000, I was told that there's this regular caller that we get, and he would call up with questions, on random times, and sometimes a couple times a day with just random astronomy questions. And so we were taking these questions, and then I was looking through the old files from old correspondence, and we have a letter from the same guy. So he's been calling all the way up to the present day, and we have a letter from him that's dated 1983. And I thought
the letter
is
from 1983.
Yeah. So this is 1983, and he just called about 2 weeks ago. So he continues from 1983 on to send us correspondence. So this is the letter from 1983.
Oh my gosh!
It is. I see two dots in the Orion Nebula every evening. I think it is a neutron star. Can you tell me if it is? Sincerely, Howie.
Oh,
and
my
so
goodness.
The response letter from my predecessor at the observatories, Paul Knorr, dated May 2nd, 1983, says, Dear Howie, the Orion Nebula is one of the most active regions of star formation in our Milky Way galaxy. The dots you see are probably part of a group of very young, very hot blue giant stars that form a somewhat lopsided rectangular figure commonly referred to as the trapezium. So the dots that you are seeing are not neutron stars, but thanks for the letter. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
So that's from 1983.
Yeah.
And so my most recent one.
When?
This is from June of 2017. Dear Cincinnati Observatory, when the Hubble Space Telescope was launched, I heard about that it was going to look for another star in our solar system. Has it seen another star in the solar system? So, I mean, this is like 34 years later, he's still inquisitive.
And good questions.
And maybe we just haven't answered his questions well enough in the past, but it's amazing that he's sending these. So I thought I'd read my response, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah, please.
So thank you for your letter and your question about the Hubble Space Telescope. You're wondering if the Hubble had found another star in our solar system. And some astronomers wondered if maybe we did have another star in our solar system, something that's really, really far away. However, so far, no one has ever found any evidence of a second sun in our solar system, and it seems really unlikely. Our technology has gotten so good that it's probably not there. But thanks a lot for the question, and this was right before the solar eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
So I sent him a pair of eclipse glasses because he lives in Kentucky right by the eclipse path.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so great because he wrote a letter, again, back to me and said, thanks for the eclipse glasses, and he saw the eclipse.
Really?
So, yeah.
I didn't hear about that part. That's
here's
fun.
A fan of the observatory for at least 34 years.
Great natural curiosity.
I know. So, Howie, that one goes out to you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for all the questions. Keep them coming.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Adam Cole from NPR's Skunk Bear for being our special guest. Get in touch with us. We're on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/lookingupwvxu. We're also on Twitter @LookingUpPodcast.
You can also drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and we can try to answer them on future episodes.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes or Stitcher, and please take a moment to rate or comment on us there, or visit wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provided additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.